How many of you here, this is your first time in Gita Nagari? A big warm welcome to Gita Nagari. You'll find that those of us that have been here before have already found that Gita Nagari is a magical place, mystical, magical place, and you can expect the unexpected. Something transformational, something amazing, something experiential, something will happen. And part of the magicalness of Gita Nagari, of course, is Sri Sri Radha Damodar. There's a 2-volume book written about them, The Adventures of Radha Damodar. For those of you that are not familiar, Radha Damodar were part of a very ancient program in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, led by a wonderful kirtanier, Vishnu Jan Swami, and a traveling bus. And then the traveling bus became about a dozen buses. Only one of them had Radha Damodar. But they were lovingly worshipped by Vishnu Jan Swami and lovingly sung before by Vishnu Jan Swami and taken to all kinds of different places. My first encounter with Radha Damodar was on the sidewalk of Harlem, 125th Street, Harlem, near, I forget the name of the park, but it's conventionally known as Junkie Park, Needle Park. And there they were on a, you know, in a canopy, little portable temple, and devotees chanting and distributing prasadam and books right on the sidewalk of New York City and all around. And as that bus program wound down, they came here. They're very liberal in giving their mercy. So ask them for their mercy and something will happen. Even if you don't ask, something will happen. But if you ask, they're very merciful. So that they're the centerpiece of the magic of Radha Damodar. And there's many other things, but I'll leave it to your experience what that mystery is going to be for you. Some number of years ago, going back, I don't know exactly the number, something like 30 years, on a regular basis we've been conducting activities here in Gita Nagari. It started for a whole week, then it became a weekend. So this Memorial Weekend has been a place where many devotees. It's now expanding all the way to the West Coast and Texas and Florida and all around the place, but largely from the East Coast come, and on different themes we take a topic and go deeply into the topic, so that when the participants leave, they're resonating with the topic. So one of the favorite topics some years ago, was Say Yes to Krishna. And it seemed to just keep coming up and coming up and coming up in the last year. So we're doing a rerun, or taking the same theme, Say Yes to Krishna theme, and going with it again. So this evening, my intention is to do two things. Just expand on the theme. What's it all about? When we say yes to Krishna, what's the meaning? What's its significance? And then the second part is to little bit lay a scriptural foundation, at least for the theme and even more particularly for the things that I'd like to speak about on the theme. Is Subal still here? There's a ring back. Do you hear the ring back? Okay. He controls the panel from over there. He's got a little Ishwar above spirit remote control. Anyway. So, where to begin? I think we'll begin. We'll begin with Jiva Goswami. Some of you are a little new. You may not know who is Jiva Goswami. On the bottom shelf of our altar, there's our disciplic succession, and way over to the right, there's a picture of six sadhus or holy men. They were residents in Vrindavan, direct associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And one of those six is Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami, I'm a Jiva Goswami fan, sorry. But Jiva Goswami wrote three different commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam. Our founder Acharya was working on, nearly completed, one verse by verse commentary. Jiva Goswami wrote such a commentary. He called it Krama Sandarbha. And then he wrote another commentary, very expanded commentary, just on the 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he wrote a third commentary on a topic by topic from Srimad Bhagavatam called the Sat Sandarbhas. And one of those six Sandarbhas was Bhakti Sandarbha. So from Bhakti Sandarbha, he's teaching the way to act in one's relationship with Krishna. Again, this is to help people that are a little new. The first section, well, the major section is explaining everything that exists has a relationship with its origin, its source of emanation. And that's called Sambandha, the relationship of all things with the source of emanation. And then there's another section. When you act in that relationship with the source of emanation, that's Abhideya. It's another category. So Bhakti Sandarbha is the largest of the six. And it begins with a question. Not exactly, but it begins, keeping it simple, it begins with a question: how does material life begin? Because if we understand how material life begins, we'll be able to understand how to exit material life and return to our original position in our relationship with Krishna. It's like most of us came through this entry downstairs. There's another entry over here, another one over there, but just to keep it simple, the entry over there. And so when it's time to exit and go take prasadam, we go that way. We exit the same way we entered. It's very simple. Similarly, Jiva Goswami reasons, if we understand how our material life begins, we can understand how to exit. material life and enter into original activities in relation to Krishna. So he considers, some scholars say this, some scholars say that, some other people say something else, and refutes them, and then says, our material life begins by turning our attention away from Krishna. Bahir, Mukha, Jeev. Jeev is the living entity. Mukha means face. And Bahir means away. Like we say, Bahir Nishingo, Hridaye Nishingo. Lord Nishingadeva is inside and he's outside. So when we turn our attention away from Krishna, our material life begins. So the solution is turn your attention to Krishna. And your material life will terminate. There's a cultivation of that consciousness of turning attention towards Krishna. That's sadhana, bhakti. And then there's the spontaneous rendering of serving Krishna, bhava bhakti, and the mature stage is prema bhakti. But to get to prema bhakti, to restore the healthy condition, we have to begin by turning our attention toward Krishna. So in real simple language, we said no to Krishna, we just have to practice saying yes to Krishna. Very simple. And so the topics that the speakers have chosen on the theme, it's their, the thoughts they'd like to share on what does it mean, say yes to Krishna. There's a nice verse, another scriptural, so now I'm going to start laying a scriptural foundation. There's another verse in Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, raga, dvesha, samutena, dvandva, mohena, bharata. One's material life is the product of two things. Raga and dvesha. Though this is in relation to Krishna. We covet the position of Krishna. Prabhupada explains it this way, very simple. I'm a citizen and I see the king sitting on the throne and I get the idea I'd like to sit on that throne. At least for a while. It's only fair. He could sit there sometime, but I'd like to sit there sometime too. So we covet the position of the king, but there's somebody that's already there. So there's dvesha, or animosity, or ill will. You want to depose the king so you could sit on the throne. Raga, dvesha, samutena, dvandava. Dvanda means duality. We come into this world of duality and mohena. The mind becomes the moha. Very bewildered and attracted to the position of being the enjoyer of God's property. It's his property. It's his energy. He's the source of this energy. That's the first part. There's the original source of everything. And whatever that is, we're connected with that, and yoga means to connect with that, whatever that is. And so spiritual life is searching for that, the source of everything. And the Vedas teach us that the source of everything is the Supreme Person. And he has an eternal abode, and he has spiritual form, and he has wonderful qualities, and he has loving exchanges with the residents in that spiritual world. And hearing these topics with faith carries one to that realm once again. It means out of the material realm. I'll just highlight a certain word that I very quickly went over, and we'll come back to it again, but faith. There's a discussion in Bhagavad Gita where Arjun says to Krishna, what about people that don't have faith in you? Do they have faith in something else? And the answer is yes, they have faith in something, because he doesn't use these words, but faith is of the soul. It's something that's already there. And so if it's not faith in Krishna, then it's faith according to the modes of nature. And the whole chapter is describing divisions of faith influenced by the modes of nature. But what happens when the modes of nature influence subsides? What does that faith look like? It's faith in Krishna, because that's the nature of the soul. So one may be influenced by the modes of nature and karma. So what's life like that's free from karma and free from the modes of nature? It's spiritual life. And what about life that's in our present condition where we're influenced by the modes of nature and we're influenced by karma? Well, it's the practice of saying yes to Krishna, the practice of taking shelter of Krishna. Here's another scriptural reference. Again, it's Jiva Goswami in his Bhakti Sandarbha. He treats this topic this way. He uses the word, it's a whole section. Anuchet is called, the whole section called Sharanapati. And Sharana means shelter. Someone that said yes to Krishna, they have shelter. They have Krishna's shelter. Sharanapati. And apati means has attained. There's Sharanagati. Many of the devotees here are familiar with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs called Sharanagati. That means going to the position of Sharana. And Sharanapati is you're there. Sharanapati, having attained. It's just a subtle difference. The essence is the same. So, Jiva Goswami says, there's impetus to seek shelter. And the impetus to seek shelter is, we're in a fearful place. A place of darkness where we don't know what's going to happen next. And we have something of an idea, it's going to rain this weekend. That's what they keep saying. It changes a little bit, but it's going to rain this weekend, most likely. But we're not sure. That's the forecast. So if it's going to rain, we may take our umbrella. So you deal with the circumstance, but it doesn't change carrying out your duties in life. Same. The path of Sharanagati, of striving to take shelter, is we want shelter. We want that connection with Krishna. And the sense of being disconnected with Krishna, Jiva Goswami says, it's a position of fear. He says it over and over in this whole Anuchet, the whole section. We're being pushed by forces, even apparently against our will, lust, anger, greed, envy, jealousy, hatred, animosity toward, feelings arise, and we want to push them down, but they come anyways. And they cause misery. And so seeking relief from that misery, one wants a place of safety. Why is that? Because it's natural for the soul. That's why. There's so many things that are natural. Why do we want to live eternally? Because the soul's eternal. Why do we want to be happy? Because by nature the soul is happy. Why do we seek knowledge? Because by nature the soul is knowledge. all over the world, doesn't matter. It's just the nature of the soul. Different bodies, they act it out in different ways. So Jiva Goswami says this nature of saying yes to Krishna, he uses the word sharanapati, coming to the position of full shelter, is of two kinds. One is just basically throwing your hands up in the air and saying, help, I have no other shelter but you. And the other is, Jiva Goswami says, by the process of using your intelligence and selectively casting aside other shelters, leaving only one shelter. It's just different ways of getting there. And he gives scriptural examples of both. And the first of those scriptural examples is Krishna's mother, Devaki, in chapter 3 of Canto 10. Krishna has just made his appearance in the prison house of Kamsa, and she speaks about fear. And her explanation or her statement to Krishna is, in this world, without exception, there's fear for everyone. And it's fear is something you can't get away from, she says, even if you go to other planets, because fear will follow you, fear of death. Whatever situation you have, it's going to terminate. It's going to end. And we commonly cling to whatever it is that we have and don't want to let go. She says, but now that you've appeared, fear and death personified have gone far away. And because of your presence, just by your presence, those who are connected to you, they're free from fear, and they're very happy. Of course, she and Vasudev, for starters. But it's true, by Krishna's presence, that's what came about. So he provides shelter, and it's easy to take shelter when there's other unwanted things that are the alternative, that are fear-producing. We'll come back to this fear item again shortly. And then Jiva Goswami says this other category is where one, with intelligence, casts aside other things that are temporary shelters. And the reference that he makes is Krishna speaking to Uddhava, 11th canto Bhagavatam, because it's part of a long explanation of elevating activities of life, the Vedic way of life, and in the course of the Vedic way of life, explaining it, Krishna comes to the conclusion, my dear Uddhava, a person who is thoughtful and intelligent, they'll cast aside the expectations of happiness through elevation, through fruit activities, karmakanda, and the knowledge of gyanakanda, the search for Brahman. Their inquisitiveness into dharma, going into the future and anything that they have already known, because all of the fruits of all those things is one thing, and that's taking shelter of me. So my dear Uddhava, just take shelter of me, and you'll become fearless. Your life will become perfect, and you'll become fearless. Of course, Uddhava's already there. That's Uddhava's nature already. So that second one is similar to dedication of oneself, that I become the property of Krishna. Of course, we are the property of Krishna anyway. We don't become, we are. It's very simple. What can you say is yours? Think of something that you think of as your shoes that are downstairs. There's a time when you didn't have them, and there's a time you're not going to have them, and somebody may walk away with them. And your wealth, your home, your body. Well, It's something that was given to us and something is going to be taken from us. It's not ours. And so then things that are extended from the body, home, bank balance, car, now you see it, now you don't. So it's not ours, and you don't willfully, it disappears. It's taken by time. It's gone. Then what about the soul? Well, the soul is also Krishna's spiritual potency. We can't even say the soul is mine. So what's mine? The relationship that we have with Krishna, it's intrinsic to us. So that's the say yes to Krishna message. The Sharanapati is the position of saying yes to Krishna is to be dedicated to Him. That's self-realization, to realize who we are as a spiritual entity, but not just on our own. We're part of something very great and grand. We're part of the Supreme. As the trees that are waving in the wind and the cows that are grazing in the pasture and Tuscarora Creek that's going downstream and everything that's happening, the day and the night and the changes of the season and everything that's going on, it's Krishna's energy moving under His direction, or at least His sanction, the sanction of Paramatma, who is just a portion of a plenary portion, just a fragment of Krishna. The greatness of Krishna is unfathomable. Another very nice scriptural reference. I'm going to expand on these. This is just laying a foundation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks of this in his writings, Amnaya Sutra. I had to look it up to make sure I had the right understanding. Amnaya is a term that generally means Vedas or knowledge. Amnaya Sutra, little codes. So he wrote Amnaya Sutra, his own sutras of knowledge. And he explained that the essence of this saying yes to Krishna, the essence of taking shelter of Krishna, is faith. And on the other side of faith is something tangible. Not faith in air, it's faith in something palpable and tangible. It's faith in Krishna. And he quotes a verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami, and he says that in Bengali, it's not Sharanapati or Sharanagati, it's something quite similar. Sharanatma, where one who takes full shelter of Krishna, Krishna then considers that person his intimate associate. I like it. When we say yes to Krishna, it's not just we say yes to Krishna, period. Like some kind of impersonal conception. It's a very personal exchange. We say yes to Krishna and Krishna says yes to us. If we give ourselves fully to Krishna, Krishna gives Himself fully to us. And this verse by Mahaprabhu says, He considers that surrendered soul to be His intimate associate. Krishna considers that person who has said yes to Him His intimate associate. Now there's those that say no to Him. And we're somewhere in between, trying to say more yeses than nos. Trying. But those who are saying no to Him, he has affection for them also. It's just there isn't the same intimacy of loving exchange. Now there's another very, again, I'm attempting to give a scriptural foundation, and I deliberately, as we go along, at least as I go along, I'm going to make reference to some of these and then expand them So rather than trying to do it in one class, I'm going to do it in several. This message of fear. Fear is part of darkness. And the material world is a place of darkness. The absence of light is darkness. And the absence of darkness is light. Light is stronger than darkness. So when we say yes to Krishna, the darkness goes. But when we're not saying yes to Krishna, but saying no to Krishna, darkness is there. And in that darkness, there's fear. So there's a very nice verse referred to by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas that I've been speaking about quite a bit lately. Okay. We couldn't open the bookcase, so we had to use this. You can look it up later if you like. It's 11:237. Bhayam means fear. Bhayam dutiyam abhiniveshitak syat. Ishad apetasya viparyayo smritihi tan maya yato. There's that word maya. Tan maya yato buddha abhajat tam bhaktyai kashe bhaktyai kayesham gurudeva tatma. So syat means arises. Bhayam syat. Fear arises at a certain condition. What's that condition? Dvatiya. Dvatiya means, it's the same root as duality. Something other than the Lord. What exists other than Krishna? Nothing. But when you become attached to something thinking it's separate from Krishna, and it has value unto itself, that's maya. Dvatiyam abhiniveshita. Abhiniveshita means absorption. So when you become absorbed, you know, in material life, you come, material is simple definition. Material means seeing things separate from Krishna. Spiritual means seeing things in relation to Krishna. Very simple. Bhayam dutiyam abhiniveshitak syat. Fear arises when one becomes absorbed in something other than the Lord. Then ishad apetasya. Apetasya means turned away. Exactly what Jiva Goswami explains in the Sandarbhas. When you turn your bahir mukha jiv. Ishada petasya. When you turn your attention away from the Supreme, viparyayo smritihi. Viparyayo means you forget. You're in darkness. You forget reality. You forget who you are. You forget everything. Then you have another set of somethings. And that's the other set of somethings is misidentification. Asmritihi. Forgetfulness and misidentification. You're maya. And maya, what's the cause of being in maya? How do we get here? We turned our attention away from Krishna and we became attached to things that seem to be existing separate from Krishna. And trying to have fun. Trying to, what Rabindra Swarup Prabhu calls, create our own little God project. You know, or what Prabhupada says is building a sandcastle by the beach. And you build your sandcastle and the tide comes in and washes it away. Time meaning time. So whatever it is, you may not build a sandcastle on the beach. You may build a skyscraper somewhere. And time comes and it takes it all away. Whatever it is, however much one accumulates, etc., etc. Bayam dutiyama vinivesitakshat ishad epetasha viparyayo smritihi tan mayaya. The illusory energy of the Lord. Tan is a pronoun, possessive pronoun. It's the illusory energy of the Lord, and we become like stuck to that illusory energy. Even we may try to get unstuck. Say, I don't like it. And you're stuck because of the force, the bondage of our past activities. So we may want to say yes to Krishna. I mean, we're here because we want to say yes to Krishna. But our conditioned tendencies are very strong. And those conditioned tendencies have places of shelter, like the mind. Our dear friend, the mind. And we're very accustomed to taking dictation from the mind. We listen very attentively to our companion who advises us, don't say yes to Krishna. You might find yourself in not being protected or not, you know, all the things that you need you won't have or something or something or something or something or something. It's so many somethings. The distraction is second nature for us when we're trying to say yes to Krishna. So we're going to be spending time exploring these topics together. How to, one of the main, strengths to say yes to Krishna is the association of those who are saying yes to Krishna. The association of devotees and sadhu sangha. And in the association of devotees, do what devotees do. We worship Radha Damodar. We have nice kirtan. We hear topics about Krishna. We go take a tour of the farm and see the cows and do all kinds of things that are in relation to Krishna. And understand sharing with one another what our opportunities and struggles and circumstances of life are. We'll have some of that purposefully, like, you know, interactive sessions. I'll just do one more thing and then see if there's some discussion. This is just introduction. One of the things that inspired me the most when we had this Say Yes to Krishna session the first time, it was a Saturday afternoon, so, you know, by that time everybody got there and it wasn't raining. So everybody was, you know, happy. And, Krishna Leela was facilitating and she had somebody standing at the flip chart, saying, you know, what are those things that you don't like? And it took a while to get everybody going. And once they were going, they must have filled up 15 of those sheets of things they don't like. That's, you know, okay, that's good enough. You know, everyone was rolling on the floor and laughing at things they don't like. And then, so the exercise was, okay, this is say no to Krishna. And what's it like to take that same something and say yes to Krishna? You don't like it, but you don't have to like it, but how do you interact with that thing you don't like and say yes to Krishna? And everyone had a big question mark on their forehead. What's she talking about? And so one of the things that was done to help was role play. They had people come up in front of everybody and, you know, here's, act out, pick one on the chart that you don't like and then act it out. This is how you behave when you don't like something. You say no to Krishna. What does it look like? And then take the same something and how do you act and speak when you're saying yes to Krishna with something that you don't like? It's not, you have to like Donald Trump or something. Or that it's going to rain. I let one of our organizers here know it's rain's coming, and they said, great, say yes to Krishna. So some adjustment will have to be made while with a big smile inside you're saying yes to Krishna. Maybe it won't rain. We can say yes to Krishna if it doesn't rain too. But this way or that way, how to say yes to Krishna from your heart. That's, so I found that very moving. And in fact, as far as I can remember, everyone got a say yes to Krishna button. That was like, you know, it was real, really into it. Say yes to Krishna button. So if we could live our lives, philosophically speaking, this is one of the sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami. There's the paramatma feature of Krishna, who is not the fullness of Krishna, but he has a function of overseeing everything to do with Prakriti. And he's giving his sanction. Maya dyakshena Prakriti. Suyate sacharacharam. So he's making some arrangement for it to rain. Or not rain. And we say yes to Paramatma because it's going to rain. And then you just expand that in things that happen. You don't have to like the things that are happening. But so how to be Krishna conscious in a world that's a world of duality? Sometimes it's this and sometimes it's that. Sometimes there's pleasure, sometimes there's pain. Sometimes it's light, sometimes it's dark. Sometimes there's honor, sometimes there's dishonor. Sometimes and sometimes. And how do you live your life saying yes to Krishna when it's over here and over there? That's practical living, but the core of it is your heart and your heart saying yes to Krishna. It starts with sadhu sangha, because within that sadhu sangha, there's the capacity to awaken the say yes to Krishna spirit or the bhakti spirit. According to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, this is a scriptural foundation item. Not only bhakti is within the heart, but prema is within the heart of every living entity. And it becomes awakened by those who are carrying bhakti. And the stronger the bhakti carried by the bhakta, the more capacity there is to awaken bhakti in others. And when you gather bhaktas together in a magical place like Gita Nagari at the lotus feet of Radha Damodar, magic happens. A visual example for me is, if it doesn't rain, are you planning to have a bonfire? It's one of the rituals in Gita Nagari. Somewhere over there in the parking lot, everybody has to move their cars because they're going to have a bonfire and then tell stories or something. Roast marshmallows or whatever you do. So at the end, then there's just these coals kind of lying around. So supposing there's some coals lying around and they're just, you know what coals do, they just, as the wind blows, they're glowing a red glow. Bring them, take a stick or a shovel or something and bring them all together and just go like that. And it's no longer cold, it's fire again. So, same. Here we are, in coming to Gitanagari from distant places, at different stages of our devotional service, and just bring that bhakti energy together, focused on saying yes to Krishna, and fan it a little bit. That's what we're attempting to do. Making reference to scripture so we were guided properly, not just, you know, the mind saying yes and then tomorrow it's no. But guided by the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and our great acharyas. So there's the introduction to our topic. Any sharing or thoughts? Do we have a portable microphone? Oh, look at that. Okay.
Guru Maharaj, on this last point of we don't have to like the thing that is happening, but we attempt to say yes to Krishna anyway. So I guess there are stages and layers of maturing.
Oh yeah.
In saying yes to Krishna.
Oh yeah.
And so to begin with, you know, even if we don't like it, we say yes. Could you please explain, you know,
layers?
Where are we going with saying yes to
Krishna? We'll start with what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and that is, do you tolerate something you don't like? You tolerate. And even something that you like, you tolerate. Because if you become enamored in something you like, you just wait a little while, and the opposite's going to come, and you get a punch in the nose. Because that's just the nature of duality. It's the world in which we live. So not too much. Oh, this is a reference I wanted to make. Thank you. Long essay by Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes off from a verse that says, who's eligible? It's from Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a similar reference in the Bhagavatam. Persons are eligible for pure. So that's like top of the pyramid, pure bhakti. Persons who are eligible for pure bhakti are those who are neither too much attached nor too much detached from the temporary. Such a person encountering a Vaishnav, they're an eligible candidate for Shuddha Bhakti. It doesn't mean like, you know, immediately they're there, but they're an eligible candidate. So the point here is not too much attached, not too much detached, because the too much detached means you become impersonal. I'm fried. I'm getting out of here. I want liberation. I want moksha. I want nothingness or oneness, or I don't want this somethingness. No variegatedness, please. Just homogenized numbness. That person's heart is too hard to receive bhakti. And too much attached, that person can't receive bhakti either. So, your question is, there's layers of this saying yes, and what does the whole thing look like? It starts with not being overly attracted or overly detached. You know, fried with, because after that fried with whatever the circumstances, time passes, and then I'm attracted again to the very thing that I was fried with. Because it's just the nature of material existence. So not, you tolerate as the beginning. And the tolerate, very important, like triple important, is take that same attention that was going to go to the temporary and invest it in the eternal. Sat. transcendence, Krishna, Krishna bhakti. The mood of being in service is to say yes to Krishna. But this long essay, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, he says, faith in transcendence is exhibited by service. Evidence that there's faith is when there's this circumstance or that circumstance, service doesn't stop. Service isn't created by the circumstance. Service isn't stopped by the circumstance. Service, because that's the heart, is faith in my relationship with Krishna. There's evidence. So we strive for that, and then there's layers of that. Being in our relationship with Krishna, that's where the layers go. And then in turn, layers of attachment to Krishna and layers of detachment from the temporary. Even when there's detachment from the temporary, it doesn't mean non-involvement with, it's just detachment from being the enjoyer of. And that's going to be our topic tomorrow morning. I believe if my memory is right. Sudama. So I liken it to an ocean that doesn't have a bottom. Shri Shri Radha Damodar ki. And what's that? I mean, we know puddles that have a bottom and ponds that have a bottom and lakes that have a bottom and rivers that have a bottom and oceans that have a bottom. What's an ocean that doesn't have a bottom? And the life of devotion, there's no limit to saying yes to Krishna. But so there's a starting place and then incrementally move forward toward Krishna. And then it goes deeper and as you say, layers and layers and layers. And just keep going. It's never over. Eternal life of devotion and being involved in one's loving relationship with Krishna. Just as Lord Chaitanya said to Sanatana Goswami, Krishna accepts that person as his intimate associate. And where does that go? There's no limit. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, you already talked about Saranapati. So I know Sharanagati, taking shelter of Krishna. So what you said is Sharanapati means already attained Krishna,
yes.
Sir?
I mentioned that at the very beginning.
Okay.
It's just a prefix, or excuse me, suffix. It's just so, having already attained. What's the nature of one who has attained?
Okay. Thank you.
As opposed to the process of going to the position of the detail. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, of so many varieties of people who say no to Krishna, from non-devotees to devotees, non-devotees, arrogant, proud, demoniac, sense gratification, devotees, sometimes we may find ourselves a weakness of heart or whatever is there. Everything of those things, they emanate from fear at the end? Is that how?
It's not emanate from fear, but fear is part of the environment. In darkness, there may be many different things, but one of the things that's there in darkness is fear.
So a demoniac person, or when you scrap it all out, is fear is there very, very prominent.
But it's part of their existence. Do you need examples?
No, I was just thinking, when we analyzing ourselves, we can understand where is that I'm afraid if I'm introspective from what I'm hearing from you.
I'll give you a little anecdotal example. One day, I was young brahmachari in my early 20s and was riding in a subway with my GBC member, Rupanuga. And he was looking around the subway car, leaned over to me and said, "Everybody in the subway car is unsure whether they'll get to their destination or not. They're hoping they'll get to their destination, but there's no certainty. And so they're all living in fear." I mean, it wasn't like they were, "I don't know if I'm going to get to my destination or not." But somewhere in there is the uncertainty of life. It's the same as what Devaki was saying to Krishna. And it so may not be prominent in the front of their mind, kind of fear, like a child crying for their mother. So it may not be like that. But it's there. Uncertainty. An attachment to that which is not going to be with me. Hankering for what I don't have, and what I do have, fearful that it's going to be taken. It's just part of the territory, material life. And for the devotee understands whatever I require, Krishna is going to... It doesn't make one lazy and complacent. It makes one having a sense of protection. And otherwise unprotected. Anatha sanatha, without protection, with protection. Yes, in the front. Okay, good. Go back there.
What you said from Srila Jiva Goswami about two ways.
Yes.
You said one is to ask for help, throw your hands up, and the other is to use your intelligence. Is it like an either or?
No.
Is there one better than the other, or is it?
It's not either or, nor is one better than another. It's just in varieties. They both will take you to the same place, that is the place of shelter. The second one, there's some act of discriminating. But in the first one, there's, the motivation, the way that he describes it, I could read it, but the way that he describes it is, there's the six enemies of the conditioned soul. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Mada, Matsarja, six enemies. And harassed by those six enemies, we want relief from that harassment. And therefore that's impetus. On the other hand, he explains, there's impetus, but there's obstacle from those same things. And so, to go to the position of surrender, there's two, just accept Krishna's shelter because there isn't any other shelter. And the other is analytically dismiss the other shelters one by one by one. Not this, not this. And wholesomely, fully give oneself to, as Krishna saying to Uddhava, his lotus feet. So now, and both you end up at Krishna's lotus feet. They're not the same, but they end up the same. The method is different, or the way, the path to get there is different. But it's the same position. So it's not that the jiva souls at Krishna's lotus feet, they ask, you know, how'd you get here? Which path did you take? I took the first one. Oh, I took the second one. Okay. Naturally, there needs to be knowledge. It's not with the first one. There's no knowledge. Obviously, David, you read her prayers. She has knowledge, just like Queen Kunti. She has so much knowledge. But knowledge is given to those who are engaged in loving service to Krishna. It's a byproduct. It's a subset of devotion to Krishna. So knowledge is also needed in order to sustain the position of surrender. Yes.
Hare Krishna. When the disturbances of the mind present themselves, the disturbances of the mind present themselves, how can we redirect our focus not on the disturbance itself, but actually to the shelter and the means to get past the disturbances?
It's a little bit like her question, Shivalika's question. The response, at least, is very similar. It depends on the stage of your devotion. Initially, minimally, you tolerate that which is a disturbance. You tolerate it. You don't invest value in it. Oh, it's really important. It's going to rain. Now, there should be a plan. When the plan that the person's organizing activities, what do we do if it rains? And you have a plan. And if there's no plan, then it's kind of scrambled to make a plan. But so you be thoughtful about what the disturbance is, but you don't invest everything in the disturbance. Otherwise, your whole life is spent managing disturbances, and something happens when you do that. They increase, and they seem bigger than they really are. That's one of the things that mind does. It magnifies things. If it's in the material mode, and if it's in the spiritual mode, it shrinks those things. They become insignificant. So depends on the answer. It depends on your stage of Krishna consciousness. But your question is right on the theme of our, you know, say yes to Krishna means say no to Maya. To say no to the disturbance means you tolerate them. You don't give it a lot of attention. So it's 1, 2, 3. Don't invest so much attention in the disturbance. 2, go to Krishna. 3, Krishna will give intelligence how to deal with that thing. Much better than you absorb yourself in the disturbance. You're in this detached, illumined position, knowing how to deal with whatever the circumstance is. Much better. It may be just like let it go. And maybe, you know, do something strong. But you're in this guided by Krishna position, not, you know, defend and protect and react position. Okay? Up front. We can count on our temple brahmacharis to ask questions because they're used to it.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You got a secret microphone switch. Go ahead.
I was just wanting to explore a little bit sometimes when how to balance the mind's... for example, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says one should be regulated, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes if a lot of service is coming, the mind has a tendency to kind of trick us in the sense on the plea of maintaining regulation or health or being balanced. So I'm just looking for some guidelines because part of, I understand, getting the mercy is pushing ourselves beyond a little bit our capacity or going beyond the comfort zone. But at the same time, I don't have a clear understanding of, you know, to what extent is something sense gratification, or to what extent is that perhaps needed for being regulated devotee. Is that something Krishna gives the intelligence, or in how to push ourselves and not fall into the trap of the mind convincing us, you know, against saying yes to Krishna, where it may be more like sense gratification?
I just saw 4th of July fireworks. Wow. I can't, there are many, so many pieces in your question, I can't fit it all together. Yeah. Can you break it down into like smaller pieces? I don't follow the question. I'll say back part of it that I think I got. In the execution of devotional service, we shouldn't be complacent. We should be regulated, and we should go a little bit beyond our comfort zone to extend ourselves, either qualitatively or quantitatively, in our service to Krishna. Yes? So now, how do we know, with some guidelines, please, about when it's we're just staying in our comfort zone, or when we're extending ourselves beyond what we should be extending ourselves because it's not part of the life of regulation? That's what you're asking? Wow. More or less. Okay. It's different from person to person, for starters. And then even within a particular person, there may be times when this more regulation is needed. And there may be times when more extending oneself a bit is needed. I'll give an example. Just was with somebody that was in a car accident. Their car was totaled, and there's still, it was some days ago, and there's still like raw nerves. That person doesn't need to push themselves. That person needs to calm themselves and center themselves and just, you know, just do basics and kind of regather their sensibilities. So that's one person. So circumstances within an individual may vary from time to time. Having said those things, we each of us need to be a little introspective and honest with ourselves and monitor what's needed. What's the standard of, let's just say, what time I should get up in the morning? Or let's just say, for Ekadasi, what's a good standard for me? It's not just comfortable, but increasing austerities, simplification of my bodily activity, and increasing something on the hearing chanting side. What's doable for me? And then set that standard and regulate it. It's a little stretch, but... And then circumstances may push back on that, but I try to keep the regulation because I know it's important. And then I'm always looking out on the horizon saying, What's the next doable step? And I may not even be ready to make it just now, but I'm looking out there. So rather than becoming complacent, I'm eagerly looking for strengthening the Krishna connection and diminishing, you know, on the temporary side. And it requires a little common sense, which is pretty rare in this world. And you know, sustaining something, what is sustainable for me, and then then you start this calibrating. In some circumstances, I need to just be more, you know, conservative or more focused on the regulation, like this example I just gave. My life just got turned upside down. I really need to try to do less and to be more focused on the quality of what I'm doing in a careful way. And then when strength, clarity, I'm looking for that next, like that. Yes. All the questions are from the men's side, almost.
Maharaj, whenever this discussion happens on saying yes to Krishna, I think that automatically it goes towards externals. You know, what externals I say yes to.
Uh-huh.
And then a thread goes in me, wait a minute, these are all externals. The yes is actually internal, it's not external.
Yes.
So are we saying that... are we saying that saying yes externally, something internally would happen, or how do I come out of this? And actually I want to say the internal yes, I don't want to keep saying the external
well,
yes.
You know, I know what you're going to do. You're going to be less concerned about the external and more concerned about the internal. And that's saying yes to Krishna too, isn't it? But will that saying yes to Krishna internally manifest as something? It may not be apparent to others, but something. What's inside comes outside. So the essence is... It was in the overview that I gave at the beginning, but the real essence is the insight. Like we're going to hear tomorrow morning. I believe it's tomorrow morning. Sudama. The external was this and the external was that, and he was saying yes to Krishna. So in our lives or in your life, you know, the message that we need to carry home is not change external things. That's not what's going on here this weekend. It's our relationship with Krishna. That's internal. And how that's going to manifest is going to be variegated. How we'll exercise that say yes to Krishna muscle inside is going to be very different. There's all kinds of people here with all kinds of different stages and positions and devotional service. I'm with you in terms of the message is not external. But for somebody, that may be a beginning. Yeah? Just come in and, you know, wash pots. Or go to the temple and serve out prasadam. They just like some service. That's a say yes to Krishna. Some is just come and eat prasadam. You know, let's say yes to Krishna. But it's the essence is not the eating prasadam or the serving the prasadam or the washing the pots. The essence is the relationship with Krishna essence. And it comes in different forms. And Krishna reciprocates. The focus is the internal, not the external. I'm with you. Hey, we have one for the ladies' side.
I have a thought and then a question.
Okay.
The thought was when you were explaining about or sharing about how we should ask the question, what is ours anyways? And we don't, our car is not really ours or house or etc. I was thinking about a talk Srila Prabhupada gave during the installation of Rukmini Dwarkadish in LA, and he said the same thing, that what actually do we have to offer to Krishna? But he concluded by saying it's our feelings. I was just remembering that. Couldn't really connect it to our topic or anything, but it was resonating when he was speaking that.
Well, it's right on the topic that he's brought up. It's the internal, it's the feeling-ness with which we offer something to Krishna that's most meaningful. Go ahead.
The question is, something I've been struggling or trying to figure out for a while. When we take shelter of Krishna, or we have many shelters, but devotees can also be a shelter.
Sure.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But I find in myself that if there is a person there that I can take shelter in, I tend not to call out to Krishna so feelingly and helplessly. And I've seen the opposite as well when I sometimes don't have the person or somebody to turn to at the moment. Or
I got
then I've been really able to call out. And it's nice also, like, so just...
It's more of a comment than a question.
Yeah,
so
I guess.
The maturing of that would look like Krishna has sent that devotee. They're representative of Krishna. It's Krishna. Mm. And it's comforting to know that Krishna cares, but it's not that Krishna doesn't care when there isn't that proximate Vaishnav. It's another relationship with Krishna. My response to you is just there's variety, and maturing stages to see when there is that association, the accessible proximate association of a devotee that's worthy of your trust, that's a manifestation of Krishna's mercy. And the other is another manifestation of Krishna's mercy. Mm. Something that I learned in growing up in Christianity, from the Old Testament, there's a time for all things. It's like in the 60s there was a popular song like that. From the Old Testament. There's a time for all things. So with each circumstance of life, there's something for us to learn in our relationship with Krishna. So you can feelingly be grateful to Krishna that he sent this proximate Vaishnav, and so see the Vaishnav in relation to Krishna, which is really what's going on. That's my response. And as bhakti matures, that realization will also grow. The sense of being, a sense of well-being in relation to Krishna, feeling well-being, not just out of fear of something that's representing Krishna to be nearby to take shelter of. It's Krishna's shelter or Krishna's shelter or Krishna's shelter in different ways. And different reciprocations. Just like the residents of Vrindavan. When some difficulty comes, they call out for Krishna. And when there isn't, then they're playing with Krishna. Just varieties of exchanges with Krishna. It's variegatedness in their relationships with Krishna. So like that, we're not so mature like them, but in bhakti, but it's the same principle. Develop attachment for Krishna, and you'll have those feelings in relation to Krishna in all circumstances.
May I just add some thoughts? The question that you gave the answer, but I just wanted to share that when this happens, I notice in myself I become upset with that person, thinking that, you know, you're becoming a cause for me to not call out a feeling. And So I know it's...
We take responsibility for your own feelings, please.
Yeah. It's almost like I tend to see myself becoming dependent on that person and thinking, no,
but that's not
I
the person's fault. That's you don't project your difficulties on the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. One last question, and then who's going to be with the kirtan? Huh? Okay. Get yourself organized.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. My question is on this point of eligibility, and it's a two-part question. You were talking about the eligibility of being not too much attached and not too much detached.
Uh-huh, you like that.
And I was thinking, like, in the sense of saying yes to Krishna, as there are layers of saying yes to Krishna, can also be understood as layers of increasing our eligibility, in the sense of, yes, there are people who would not even take up the process, being on the extreme side of that. But then, even when I have taken up the process, there is an increasing of my eligibility at every level.
There's increasing of what?
My eligibility at every level.
Your which...
Eligibility.
Okay. And so, you're making an observation more than anything, right?
I'm trying to understand that. Is that a right understanding? That the more I'm applying myself to the process, my eligibility is increasing in that sense.
Yes. However, that as the eligibility increases, one of the things that may happen is, just like Uma was sharing with us here, I realize there's stuff in my heart that really isn't helping me get closer to Krishna. Well, that's good, because otherwise it would just be there and we wouldn't even recognize that it's there. But eligibility is, we get some realizations about qualities and faults. And we want to exercise the qualities and we want to give some, you know, pull the weeds on those, or pull the roots on those weeds of faults. Address them. You know, not run from them, but address them. Okay.
So, just the continuation of that. So, I'm just trying to understand this thing that, so when I'm applying the process properly, then I'm advancing in my, in sense of eligibility, and if I'm doing offenses, that takes me to the other side, that
yes,
one of the symptoms would
correct.
Be that?
That eligibility gets covered. Hmm. Doesn't mean like it goes away, it just gets covered. I'll share with you the sect, it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he refers a lot to Jiva Goswami, but he's making the point that it's faith that carries one. So, you know, to Shuddha Bhakti. Anyway, in relation to what you just said, yes, if I make offenses, that faith becomes covered and I'm taking shelter elsewhere besides transcendence because of the offense. So the eligibility gets covered. And the faith wanes and fades and I'm lost for some time. And then, well, okay. Hare Krishna, Prabhupada ki jai.